This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Most of the people on the pier were holidaymakers and day trippers, people from out of town, which was handy, as it meant that nobody recognised him. Sunday, August the 30th, 1925, was a pleasantly warm late summer's day on the south coast of England. It was a bank holiday weekend, so the resorts were particularly busy. The pier at Hastings was thronged with people that morning. As well as a brass band concert, at noon the steamer Devonia was leaving from the end of the pier to make a day excursion across the channel to Boulogne. Among the happy shouts of children, the thunder of feet on the wooden planking, and the cries of the ice cream sellers, and the show touts for the pier divers and pieros trying to drum up business, a man sat quietly and patiently on a bench. He was immaculately turned out, in a three-piece suit with a stud collar and a trilby hat. His beard was neatly trimmed, and his manicured hands rested on top of his walking cane. In front of him, an older, burly man rummaged in his trouser pocket, handed a few coins to a companion, sent him off to buy a newspaper, looked down at the man in the suit, and said, "Let's go." The man stood up, straightened his jacket, adjusted his cuffs. He nodded at the older man, and they walked together towards the gangway of the Devonia. Depending on which way you looked at it, what was happening on Hastings Pier that holiday morning was either a dangerous lunatic making his escape, or a man being held against his will, being released from unjust incarceration after every legal option had been exhausted. They only noticed he was missing when he didn't appear for lunch promptly at 1 o'clock, just as he always did. Just as he'd always done, for the 25 years he'd been a resident at Ticehurst House Hospital, a polite name for what was then called a lunatic asylum. Ticehurst House was an exclusive lunatic asylum, an expensive lunatic asylum. And while Prince Ahmed Saif ed-Din of Egypt was far from the only well-to-do resident, he was the only royal. He had his own suite of rooms, enjoyed playing gramophone records, and never gave the staff any trouble. He was always quiet and polite, and enjoyed many privileges. 3 times a week he was driven the 20 miles to Hastings, where he'd take afternoon tea in one of the town's finest hotels. Every Monday evening, he was taken to the deluxe cinema, where he'd watch films and newsreels from the comfort of a private box. He was a well-known face around the town, and people would greet him as "Your Highness." At first, when he hadn't returned from his Sunday outing, staff were surprised but not particularly concerned. They knew the prince was with one of their most reliable staff members, William Pilbeam, who had been the prince's attendant for more than 20 years. Maybe they had car trouble. Maybe they were held up in holiday traffic. But when 1 o'clock became 2 o'clock, and 2 o'clock became 3, they began to grow a little bit concerned. Kidnap was the first thought. Then William Highland burst through the door, red-faced and panting. "Are they here?" he gasped. Pilbeam, he said, had sent him off for a newspaper, but when he got back to the pier, both Pilbeam and the prince had gone. He'd waited, looked around the pier, but there was no sign of either of them. The prince, everyone realised, had either been abducted or he'd escaped. The 20th century was barely 7 months old when Prince Ahmed Saif ed-Din arrived at Ticehurst. To him, a strange place in a strange country. 4 years in a Cairo prison had made him look older than 22. Eyes darting from within hollow sockets. His wiry frame clenched permanently in a defensive posture. And no wonder. He'd had what can only really be described as a hell of a time. In 1895, his favourite sister, the Princess Shivakya, had married Prince Fuad, the future king of Egypt. She was the daughter of Fuad's first cousin, and one of the richest women in the country. He was up to his eyes in gambling debts. It wasn't exactly the union of the century. And soon, Ahmed began receiving tearful visits from his deeply unhappy sibling. Eventually, Ahmed went to see Fuad at one of Cairo's most exclusive gentlemen's clubs, where he found him playing bridge. Not surprisingly, an argument broke out, during which Ahmed pulled out a revolver and shot Fuad in the neck. He survived, the couple divorced, but Ahmed was sentenced to 7 years hard labour. 4 years into his sentence, the Egyptian authorities, with the help of the British government, had the prince transferred to England, where he was declared insane and placed in the institution at Ticehurst. It was intended he would remain there for the rest of his life. Ahmed's mother, Princess Nevdivijani, campaigned tirelessly for her son's release, making regular visits to England from her home in Istanbul. But her pleas always fell on deaf ears. She was convinced the doctors repeatedly certifying Ahmed's insanity were in the pay of Fuad, and battled to have him examined by independent specialists. 3 months before that sunny Hastings Sunday, she issued legal proceedings against the British government, claiming £4 million for wrongful incarceration. The case was even raised in the House of Commons, but whatever she tried, nothing ever happened. As the 25th anniversary of his arrival in England approached, Nevdivijani had had enough. An American lawyer was engaged and sent to England to make discreet approaches to carefully selected staff members who might be willing to help spring the prince. One of them was William Pilbeam. A former soldier who'd lost an eye during the Boer War, Pilbeam had started working at Ticehurst a few months after Ahmed's arrival and developed a deep affection for the prince. If Pilbeam was willing to help spirit Ahmed out of the country, there was £10,000 in it for him, a job as the prince's attendant, and an apartment for him and his wife in Istanbul. Pilbeam agreed. A few plans were considered. Inquiries were made at Deal about hiring a speedboat across the channel. But in the end, it was a poster advertising day trips on the Devonia that inspired the plan. Which is how, that Sunday morning on the southern coast of England, Pilbeam and the Prince came to be buying two return steamer tickets to Boulogne, dispatching the other attendant who'd gone with them, and boarding the Devonia. By the time anyone realised that Prince Ahmed Saif ed-Din was genuinely missing, he was already in France. Later, Frank Hedgecock from Liverpool, on holiday with his son and enjoying a day trip on the Devonia, would tell the newspapers that when he went into the ship's saloon, he noticed a foreign man sitting at a table, chain-smoking cigarettes. "He had a strange look about him," said Hedgecock. "He was drinking whiskey with another man, and at one stage the larger of the pair, William Pilbeam, took the foreign man up to the deck for some air, as he complained of feeling seasick. "535 day trippers disembarked from the Devonia at Boulogne that day. 533 came back to Hastings. A fast car was waiting at the port for the Prince and Pilbeam, which rushed them to Paris. Then they made their way to Marseille and took a ship to Istanbul. 15 British Special Branch detectives were sent to France, but Scotland Yard's finest had been outthought and outplayed. The Prince had shaved off his beard and was dressed in women's clothing for part of the journey, and lookalikes were dispatched to various hotels and destinations. One was followed by a special branch officer onto the liner Rotterdam, which had called to Boulogne on its way to New York. Another was tailed by several detectives on the Orient Express. By the time they'd traced the real Prince's movements to Paris, he was halfway across the Mediterranean. William Pilbeam would return in 1932, but he was terminally ill. Arrested at Dover and charged with aiding and abetting an escape, he was fined £20 and went home to die. The Prince was assessed by doctors when he arrived in Turkey and declared sane. He was reunited with his beloved sister and lived happily and comfortably until his death in 1937 at the age of 59. Ticehurst House is still there and still caring for the vulnerable, as it has since 1792. It's now part of the Priory. Steamers to France no longer call at Hastings Pier, which is probably for the best. That was A Coastal Story, and I'm Charlie Connolly. You can find more peer-related, if you will, peer-reviewed stories in my latest book, The Channel, which is about the English Channel. And it's available from wherever you source your books. A big thank you to those of you who've donated via the ko-fi.com/coastalstories link. That's ko-fi.com/coastalstories. You're all absolute sweethearts. I would happily spring you from an institution and spirit you across the channel. Just say the word. Don't forget to find us on Twitter, @podcastcoastal, where you can find a picture of the remarkable Prince Ahmed Saif Eddine. These waves were recorded at Deal, in the sunshine, on May the 13th, 2021.